Ready for a deep dive into a historical mystery?
Oh yeah, count me in. What are we digging into today?
We're going to explore how a wave of violent uprising in 19th century Italy might have secretly shaped how people voted in a crucial referendum decades later.
Now that's what I call a historical mystery. Sounds like a story of rebellion, maybe some long-held grudges, and some surprising twists and turns in the political landscape.
You hit the nail on the head, and the most fascinating part. We're going to uncover this link by looking at a recent research paper and a firsthand account of rural life in southern Italy during that time.
Ooh, we're talking primary sources. Always love those. What's the paper called?
It's a 2024 academic paper titled Brigandage and the Political Legacy of Monarchical Legitimacy in Southern Italy.
Okay, catchy title.
Yeah.
And for the firsthand account, are we talking diaries, letters?
Even better. We're diving into Christ Stopped at Eboli by Carlo Levi, a memoir published in 1945.
Levi's book is a powerful piece of writing. His firsthand account of life in the Italian South during that period is going to help us really understand the human impact of these historical events. So much richer than just dry facts and figures.
Exactly. Okay, so let's rewind the clock back to 1861. Italy, after centuries as a bunch of separate states, finally becomes a unified country under the House of Savoy. You'd think everyone would be over the moon, right?
You'd think so, but history is never that simple, is it?
Never. So what happened? Why wasn't everyone celebrating?
Well, while many celebrated unification, it brought serious challenges, particularly for southern Italy. This wasn't just about different flags or anthems. It meant major changes in governance and everyday life.
Yeah, it wasn't just a superficial change. This was about who held power, how things were run, and what life looked like for everyday people. And spoiler alert, not everyone was happy about it.
Right. The South, which had been under Bourbon rule, had its own distinct way of life. The arrival of the House of Savoy brought new taxes, forced military service, and a whole new system that left many feeling like they'd gotten the short end of the stick.
Can you imagine how jarring that would be? Suddenly you're expected to pay taxes to a ruler you didn't choose, fight for a king you might not even support. It's a recipe for resentment.
And resentment is exactly what bubbled to the surface. This discontent fueled what became known as the Great Brigandage, a violent uprising that gripped southern Italy between 1861 and 1870.
So who were these brigands? Were they just bandits or something more?
They were a mixed bag, really. Some were former soldiers, others were peasants who felt cheated by the new system. You even had exiled nobles clinging to the good old days before unification.
Interesting. So a real mix of people from different walks of life, all united by their dissatisfaction with the new order.
Absolutely. They found common ground in their opposition to the House of Savoy. And they weren't just a disorganized mob either. These were often organized groups, often led by people with military experience.
So they knew what they were doing.
Oh, they knew what they were doing. They used guerrilla tactics, taking advantage of the South's rugged terrain, think dense forests, mountains, to launch surprise attacks and then vanish.
Sounds like they knew how to play to their strengths. So, a situation with complex roots, not a simple case of good guys versus bad guys. How did the government respond to this uprising?
Well, the Italian government, eager to solidify its authority, came down hard. Their response was swift and brutal. Public executions, military courts, martial law. It was a full-on military campaign to crush the brigandage.
That's a pretty extreme reaction. It makes you wonder about the lasting impact this kind of heavy-handed response had on the region and the people.
It's impossible to separate the brigandage from the violence that was used to suppress it. We're talking about entire communities living in fear, generations grappling with the trauma of what they witnessed.
So we've got this period of intense unrest and violence, right? The brigandage and then this harsh crackdown. It seems like something that would leave a real mark on southern Italy.
Absolutely, a deep scar.
But how does this connect to a vote that happened decades later in 1946? It feels like a pretty big jump.
It is a big jump, and that's where things get really interesting. Fast forward with me to post-World War II Italy. Fascism has just been defeated, and the country is at a crossroads. There's this sense of a fresh start, a chance to rebuild, to redefine what it means to be Italian.
And that's where the 1946 referendum comes in.
Exactly. Italians got a vote on whether to keep the monarchy or become a republic, a truly pivotal moment.
Huge. Deciding the entire future of the country. So how does the research paper we're looking at play into all of this?
This is where it gets really fascinating. It dives deep into the voting patterns of that referendum, but it focuses specifically on areas with a history of brigandage.
Okay, so they're zeroing in on those areas we were just talking about, the ones marked by this history of rebellion and its suppression. What did they find? Did this history actually influence how people voted, even decades later?
Get this. The research found a statistically significant link. Areas that saw more intense brigandage activity back in the 1860s were more likely to vote against the monarchy in 1946.
Wow, that's wild. That's almost a century later. But how can we be sure it was the memory of the brigandage that swayed those votes? A lot happened in those 85 years. Couldn't it have been other factors?
That's the beauty of this research. They took that into account. They didn't just look at a map and assume a connection. They controlled for a whole range of factors that could askew the results.
Like what? What kind of things did they look at?
Oh, all sorts of things. Population density, economic indicators, even things like the availability of schools and hospitals in those areas back in the 1860s.
So they really did their due diligence, making sure they weren't making faulty connections.
Exactly. And even after accounting for all those other variables, the link between brigandage and voting patterns in 1946 remained strong.
Okay, that's some pretty serious detective work there. But to really wrap our heads around this, we need to understand how a historical event, even one from decades earlier, could have such a powerful impact on people's voting decisions.
And that's where Carlo Levi's book, Christ Stopped at Eboli, gives us incredible insight.
Because he was right there on the ground.
Yes. He wasn't just analyzing history from afar. He lived among the people of southern Italy, listened to their stories, saw firsthand how those events continued to shape their lives.
It's like that saying, history isn't just what happened in the past, it's what's still happening in the present, right?
Exactly. And Levi paints a very vivid picture of how memories of the brigands and of the government's response weren't just something in history books. They were woven into the fabric of everyday life.
It's like those stories, those memories became a part of their identity almost. He even talks about how every cave, every forest, practically every stone had a story attached to it, a tale of bandit daring or government reprisal. These stories became almost like folklore, passed down through generations.
And we have to remember, these weren't just abstract tales for the people hearing them. They were often deeply personal, tied to a family's own history.
Right. These were their grandparents, their great-grandparents.
Exactly. Imagine growing up hearing stories about how your great-grandparents had their farm burned down by the king's soldiers suspected of aiding the brigands. Imagine the fear they must have felt, the sense of injustice.
That's not the kind of family history you just forget.
No, it stays with you.
It makes you realize that these weren't just events. They were lived experiences, traumas that echoed through generations. So even though the actual brigands were long gone by 1946,
their memory was very much alive.
So it's almost like a ghost of the brigandage is hanging over everything. How does the research paper explain that connecting to the vote?
They argued that the brigandage and the often brutal way it was suppressed did lasting damage to how people viewed the monarchy.
Because if a king is supposed to protect his people, but instead they experience violence and oppression,
it makes you question the legitimacy of that whole system, right?
All right.
And that seed of doubt, planted decades earlier, could easily have grown in 1946 when people were finally given a chance to choose a different path.
It's like those stories, those memories passed down through generations became a lens through which people viewed the monarchy, and it wasn't a flattering one. But it's interesting, right? Because for those 85 years between the brigandage and the referendum, we don't really see this massive uprising against the monarchy.
That's a really important point. The researchers actually talk about this. For those 85 years, this resentment towards the monarchy was largely latent.
Latent meaning what exactly? Like dormant.
Exactly. It was there, simmering beneath the surface, but not necessarily something people were actively acting on. It's not like there was open rebellion against the monarchy throughout this time.
So what changed? Why 1946?
1946 happens. The war is over. Fascism is defeated. It's a blank slate, a chance to start fresh, and that long dormant resentment suddenly has an outlet, the voting booth.
So it's not just about voting against the monarchy, it's about what they're voting for, a republic, a system of governance that, at least in theory, is supposed to be more representative, more accountable to the people.
Exactly. The researchers suggest that this historical trauma, this collective memory of injustice, might have fueled this desire for a completely different system. A clean break from the past.
That's powerful stuff, but hold on a second. How did the researchers actually prove this link? They couldn't exactly hop in a time machine and interview voters from 1946. I mean, it does sound like a bit of a head scratcher. How do you go about proving something like that without a time machine?
Well, they couldn't exactly hop in a time machine, but they got pretty clever with their methods. They used a technique called instrumental variables analysis.
Okay, that sounds a little intimidating. Can you break that down for us? What is that?
Essentially, they needed something that could predict the likelihood of brigandage in a given area. But, and this is important, it couldn't be connected to those other factors they'd already controlled for, like the economics of the region or the education levels.
So they needed to isolate the impact of the brigandage itself, right? Find another piece of the puzzle that links specifically to that and nothing else?
Exactly. And they found it in the terrain.
The terrain? What do you mean?
They looked specifically at areas with lots of rugged, forested areas. Think dense woods, steep mountains, those kinds of natural hideouts. Perfect for guerrilla warfare.
Ah, so they were looking at geography. They were essentially looking for the brigands' ideal real estate.
Exactly. And as it turns out, those rugged forest areas were significantly more likely to have seen intense brigandage activity back in the 1860s. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, I'm starting to see where you're going with this. They're using the terrain as a sort of stand-in for actual brigandage activity, right?
You got it. They're isolating the impact of geography because it's linked to where brigandage happened. But it's not connected to those other factors that could have influenced the vote in 1946.
Brilliant. So they've got their stand-in. What did they find when they used this rugged terrain variable?
Even with this more rigorous analysis, the results held up. The areas with more rugged terrain, the ones that saw more brigandage, were still significantly more likely to vote against the monarchy in 1946.
Wow. It's incredible to think that something like the physical landscape could hold such a clue to how people voted decades later. It really speaks to the enduring impact of history, doesn't it?
It really does. And how those memories, those experiences get passed down through generations, shaping how people view the world and, in this case, how they vote. The brigands might have lost their fight in the 1860s, but in a way, their story lived on, and it might have helped shape the very future of Italy. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
It really is. It makes you wonder what other hidden histories are still shaping our world today. What seemingly insignificant events might have had a ripple effect that we're still feeling.
Exactly. What stories, what memories are shaping our political landscape, our social attitudes, even our own beliefs? It's a question worth pondering.
It really is. This deep dive has been incredible. Not only have we uncovered this fascinating historical connection, but we've also gained a whole new lens through which to view the past and its impact on the present.
History isn't just dates and names in textbooks. It's the story of us. It's about understanding the forces that have shaped our world and how those echoes continue to resonate even in the quietest corners of our lives.